We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up first, on this week's show, I'll be speaking with the singer-songwriter Shayna Cleveland. She'll be appearing at the Hi-Fi in Indianapolis on April 30th. And on the second half of the program, we'll have another edition of Rebel Music with Carla Lopez. This week, Carla's guest will be the Indiana State Senator, Rodney Poole Jr. Senator Poole will discuss his work with America Eats Its Young, a Parliament Funkadelic tribute band based in Northwest Indiana. Shayna Cleveland is best known as the guitarist and vocalist for the Los Angeles-based psychedelic garage band La Luz. The music of La Luz features classic surf rock riffs with vintage girl group harmonies. Over the last few years, Shayna Cleveland has crafted an equally compelling sound in her solo work. Her latest solo release, Manzanita, is centered around a delicate, finger-picking guitar sound, reminiscent of artists like Nick Drake, John Fay, and Robbie Basho. Let's hear an example. From her new album, Manzanita, this is Shayna Cleveland with Faces in the Firelight.
Faces in the firelight, the blooming inside the night. Do you love me like I do? You are just a little light, exploding on all sides. Do you love me like I do? You.
That was Shayna Cleveland with Faces in the Firelight. She'll be performing at the Hi-Fi on April 30th. And Shayna Cleveland is my guest this week. Let's join our conversation. Shayna, thank you so much for taking time to speak with us today. I know you're on tour right now and very busy, so appreciate you taking time to do this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're going to be in Indianapolis performing at the Hi-Fi on April 30th. And am I correct? You were just in Indianapolis a few months ago with your band La Luz performing at a big music festival called All In at the State Fairgrounds in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's right. I think somebody maybe dropped out of that at the last minute and we got the gig. it was really fun. I would love to play at more state fairgrounds. I think that was my first time.
And you're going to be here performing as a solo artist on April 30th at the Hi-Fi. Is this your first time in Indianapolis performing in that capacity as a solo performer?
Yeah, it is. That festival is my first time performing with any band. So yeah, I'm excited to be back so soon.
But you grew up in the Midwest, right? You're from Michigan. You're kind of a product of the Midwest, right?
Yeah. I grew up in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I went to school in Chicago at Columbia College in Chicago. And after college, I moved out to the West Coast, and I just felt kind of right for me to be there. So I haven't come back.
So you grew up in Kalamazoo. What was that like as a young person living in Kalamazoo? Was there much of a music scene there? I know some bands from Kalamazoo occasionally come and play in Indianapolis when I was a teenager. What was life like there for you?
My parents are both musicians, and they played just like blues. They played in kind of like blues cover bands. And so I would go to their shows a lot. And that was really the only music scene that I was familiar with. I always heard that there was a really good punk scene there, but that wasn't really my thing then. So I just kind of knew about my parents' music scene. And it definitely wasn't something that I was interested in personally. It wasn't like where I would want to play music if I was playing music at that time. So yeah, it took me a while to get to the place where I felt like I wanted to kind of venture out and join a local music scene. I feel like it wasn't really until I moved to Seattle after college.
Was it the Better Days band? Was that your parents' band?
Gosh, that does sound familiar. I think that they were in a band called Better Days Band. Did you research that? That's amazing.
Yeah, I saw a photo.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, they've been in a lot of bands. It's hard for me to keep track. They were in a band called Night Shift when I was a kid, and I feel like that was like the main project that I would be forced to sit through.
What was the music like? It sounds like you weren't into it.
I mean, I wasn't, just because I was a kid and anything my parents did was totally boring, but I do like it now. Like I love to see my parents play now. I was just kind of a impatient child, but it was like a, you know, covers like Under the Boardwalk. I remember they did Under the Boardwalk. Just like a kind of like classic, you know, like songs to just go to the bar and dance to.
So did you constantly have access to instruments as a kid? Were you interested in picking up a guitar as a child?
Yeah, there were always guitars around. I think I started playing bass when I was in junior high, and guitar around the same time. I would just try to pick apart like grunge songs mostly. I feel like I was just really into grunge around that time. So just like trying to figure out Nirvana songs and Hole songs and stuff like that. I was really into grunge. So yeah, I think that's probably the first music that made me excited to play. Although I didn't really, by the time I was actually playing out, I was, you know, kind of past that point, into other stuff. But that was, yeah, Nirvana, like Sonic Youth. And then a little later when I found the Velvet Underground, that was really inspiring to me.
Yeah, I can hear that being a big point of reference in your music. What was it about the Velvet Underground that spoke so deeply to you?
I think it felt sort of casual in a way that seemed accessible. I think that, like, I don't know. There's a lot. We were just listening to that song After Hours in the car yesterday, and with Mo Tucker, the drummer, singing, and she just sounds like a little kid, you know. And the music is so simple, you know, behind her, but it just feels like you could do it, you know. There's something just really inviting about a band that isn't just riffing it up, you know, that isn't trying to kind of hot rod guitar solo all over the place, even though I really like to do that kind of thing now. Yeah, I think the Velvet Underground is just like, there's something that just seems like, oh yeah, I could probably do that about them. And yet the songs are as complex as anything, you know. I tend to be really drawn to music like that, music that seems like there's no gatekeeper, you know, you can kind of get it right away.
And Shana, there are a lot of dimensions to your own music making. You know, if folks have listened to your work with La Luz, you know, it's kind of this crazy garage surf music, and your albums released under your own name have a more folk-like quality to them. Tell me about that, kind of transitioning from the garage rock sound of La Luz to developing this really beautiful sound that we hear on your new album, Manzanita, and your prior solo work.
I've been playing in this style of folk music for a really long time. I think that this is kind of the style that I started to play in right after college and sort of before I ever played out. I've just been really into finger picking and open tunings and sort of droning out and playing in this really meditative way. And it's been sort of my personal labor of love, I guess. And when I started La Luz, it was just coming from a desire to sort of lighten the energy of the room, even though I think that a lot of the music of La Luz is actually pretty dark. I think in a lot of ways, it's sort of a party band. So I really wanted to be in the party. I feel like I've never been like a very social person, or I've never really like been somebody that people like call to go party, because I probably wouldn't be interested. But I was craving that kind of connection, and I just thought, you know, I want to make a band that everyone can understand right away, that you can just kind of walk into the room and you could be like my parents' age, you know, somebody who goes out to see blues covers in a bar, or you could be like a young hipster, or you could just be anybody and walk into the room and say, oh yeah, I get this, I know what this is, like, you know, and you can dance to it. And that was kind of the original idea with La Luz. I think I just, I've always played music for myself, and I wanted to sort of be more a part of the society at large, I guess.
Let's pause and listen to a classic track Shayna Cleveland recorded with La Luz. From 2013, this is Sure as Spring. That was Shayna Cleveland in La Luz with Sure as Spring. And Shayna Cleveland is my guest this week. She'll be performing songs from her solo album, Manzanita, on April 30th at the Hi-Fi. Let's return to my conversation with Shayna as we discuss her new album, Manzanita. This album has a really incredible sound. You know, in addition to the sort of finger-picking guitar you referenced earlier, there are very cinematic sounds on this record. At times, it almost sounds like a spaghetti western soundtrack, and there's some great Mellotron-like keyboards and synth parts. Tell me about the sound and the mood of the album and what you are trying to sort of create in crafting that soundscape.
Well, it's cool that you're hearing some spaghetti western elements, because I feel like that's sort of appropriate. I really wanted to channel just the feeling of where I live, and me and my partner Will, who plays all the synths on the record, live out in rural California, and at times it feels very deserty, and it's just very, very peaceful and quiet, but also there's just a great mystery to sitting outside and just hearing sounds in all directions, but not being able to see what you're hearing. And that's the environment that I wrote a lot of these songs in, just sitting outside and playing guitar and just sort of, you know, being in nature and letting that kind of come in as an influence, you know, a lot of times subconsciously, I think. And so when we went to record the album, I really wanted to try to capture the feeling of just being outside. We ended up really doing that, I think, with the instruments that we chose to record with. So there's the guitar, acoustic guitar in the center, and it's all surrounded by these instruments that feel really sort of fluid and natural to me, like synthesizers and the pedal steel and bowed upright bass. You know, all of those instruments are very are just very fluid. And a lot of times they're playing the same parts together. So I think that it feels sort of harmonious in that way, but there's always this element of this sort of eerie undercurrent, you know, which I think is sort of the mystery of the natural world.
Shana, there have been a lot of great reviews of the album. It's gotten a lot of great press attention. And the reviews do mention the role of the natural world and nature in kind of inspiring this album. And you just mentioned that as well. Is that fair to say that the kind of atmosphere of the album and maybe your lyrics were inspired by your interactions with nature?
Yeah, definitely. Both with nature as in the outside world and also just feeling like realizing maybe for the first time in a big way that I was part of nature and that I wasn't separate from nature. And I think that that's what being pregnant did for me. And then, you know, becoming a mom, it was the first awakening to the fact that I just am not in control. I'm not the one in control sometimes, but there's this grand force of nature that is really kind of calling the shots. And being pregnant was such a strange experience because there's just this person growing inside of you, and you can do a lot of things. You know, they tell you a lot of things that you should and shouldn't eat and should and shouldn't do, and you can do those things and not do those things, but in the end it's just a total mystery how it's going to turn out. And that was really humbling, and as an artist I found that to be pretty inspiring too.
This is Shana Cleveland with Mystic Mine. That was Shana Cleveland with Mystic Mine. She'll be performing at the Hi-Fi on April 30th, and Shana Cleveland is my guest this week. Let's return to our conversation. Before we go, Shana, I wanted to ask about your work as a visual artist, too. You do a lot of drawings or paintings of cult music figures, many of which are collected in calendars that you put out annually. And the subject matter of these portraits ranges from Nina Simone to girl groups like The Blossoms to the Incredible String Band, a psychedelic British folk group. Can you tell me about your work as a visual artist and why you started creating these portraits of these, like I said, cult heroes in the music world?
Yeah. I think I started doing the portraits when I was in college, and honestly, I feel like it might have just been a sort of missing home that drove me to start making these paintings. When I was growing up, I was just surrounded by bands all the time. You know, both my parents were in bands. They were in bands together, then they were in bands apart, and all their friends were in bands, and I'm an only child, so it was just bands. That was my whole world. And, you know, they are of the generation where they always had to have these like printed out promo shots. And so I grew up kind of seeing those around the house. And I've just always had a real fondness for these sort of old school promo shots of bands. And I just started recreating those as sort of a, you know, I'd put a record on and paint, and it was just sort of a relaxing pastime. And I put together a calendar for the first time, gosh, I think like 12 or 13 years ago at this point. I just wanted something to give people for Christmas without having to, you know, kind of go out and buy a bunch of different gifts. So I thought, oh, I'll make a calendar. I can just Xerox it and I'll give the same thing to everybody. And then I just started, I don't know, the next year I did the same thing. And then eventually I started selling them. And now I just feel like I can't stop doing them because I've done them for so long.
Who are you working on now? Do you want to share any of that? Is there any portrait you're working on?
I was just in a friend's bathroom and I saw a picture of David Bowie and I just thought, oh my God, I've never done David Bowie. So I know that I'll do David Bowie for the next calendar. But yeah, I usually don't start until September. I just kind of cram them all into 1 month towards the end of the year.
Shayna, is there anything you want to tell our listeners about your upcoming appearance at the Hi-Fi on April 30th?
I'm just excited to play Indianapolis for the first time. For the first time solo. I hope people show up.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a good crowd here. And I can't thank you enough for doing this. I'm a huge fan of your work, and it's an honor to have you on the program. So thank you so much, Shayna.
Thanks so much. It was really nice to talk to you.
My guest has been the singer-songwriter Shayna Cleveland. She'll be performing with Destroyer at the Hi-Fi on April 30th. Let's hear another song off her new album, Manzanita. This is Walking Through the Morning Dew.
The birds are crazy.
That was Shayna Cleveland with Walking Through the Morning Dew. She'll be performing live at the Hi-Fi on April 30th. Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up next, we have another edition of Rebel Music with Carla Lopez.
This is Carla Lopez, and you're listening to Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto. Me llamo Carla Lopez, y estás escuchando a Música Rebelde, el Manifesto Cultural. Rebel Music explores the relationship between music and activism in Indiana and around the globe. My guest this week is the state senator and musician Rodney Paul Jr. In addition to being the first Latino Indiana state senator, he is also one of the youngest members of the state Senate. He is also part of a Parliament Funkadelic tribute band called America Eats Its Young, named after a 1972 album by Funkadelic. Let's join our conversation with Rodney Paul Jr. Senator Rodney Paul, thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We're going to listen to some music and talk about your work as an attorney, a politician, and a musician. You were born and raised in Northwest Indiana. You come from a Mexican-American and Puerto Rican family of union workers. How did your background and upbringing shape who you are today?
You know, I grew up in East Chicago, Indiana. And for those of you that are not familiar with East Chicago, particularly, you know, in the, you know, kind of post-industrial revolution era, it was, it's got to be the most diverse and eclectic community in Indiana for pretty much how small it is. I mean, it's a lot of folks that moved there because of the industry that was there between the refineries and the steel mills. And you just had a ton of culture. So my, you know, growing up, my classroom was, you know, Black, Mexican, Puerto Rican, Italian, Irish. I mean, there was, you know, you just had every type of, you know, you had every nationality, every culture. And that was growing up in it, that's the norm. You think that this is, you know, Indiana to me, if you just got dropped off there, you would think it was one of the more diverse states in the entire union. And really it's a community that, you know, it's a very blue collar community. You know, a lot of us, we didn't come from very much, you know, so we were all kind of in the same boat. You know, we didn't have, you know, there weren't really rich areas or poor areas. Everybody was kind of, you know, for the most part, you know, we're all kind of on the same level. And it was, I really, really appreciate that upbringing. I really appreciate, you know, understanding, you know, growing up with other cultures and it was kind of culture shock moving out of that. You know, I moved out of that community when I was, you know, formative years of middle school and, you know, moved to a very homogenous, you know, kind of almost rural at the time, growing community that was not far, but it seemed like it was kind of a world away for me where, you know, there were no other Latinos. There were, you know, maybe one or two Black families, you know, and you started to see some of the families move in slowly but surely, but it's still not anywhere near the experience growing up like it was in East Chicago. And that, I think, having that background, I really cherish because you really appreciate and understand, you know, where other people are coming from, what other cultures are like. I don't know if you've never been to East Chicago, but if you know, you definitely should. And to understand how really that community grew, it's really great. I'm really proud to be from there.
I have been to East Chicago. Love the space, love the place. And music is a big part of your life. You're part of a Parliament Funkadelic tribute band called America Eats Its Young, which is named after a 1972 album by Funkadelic. How did an Indiana state senator make his way into a P-Funk cover band?
So I've been playing music for a very, very long time. But, you know, Parliament, it just kind of goes to show, like, when I grew up, even though I grew up in, you know, a Puerto Rican and Mexican family, it wasn't like we just only listened to guaracha or reggaeton or you know, we listened to all kinds of music because, you know, all of our friends in the community, we listened to a lot of, my parents, they listened to a lot of funk and soul and disco. And that was, you know, they would go out to the clubs and they were listening to a lot of dance music, and that dance music really crossed cultures. And so growing up, we have family parties, you know, you would hear, you know, bands like Heat Wave, and you would hear bands like, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire. And obviously P-Funk is just, it's a party band, and you would always hear that stuff growing up. And then I was born in 1984, but, you know, so come the 1990s, all of a sudden you start hearing, you know, really how you had rap that had started in the 1980s, really started to, you know, rap and hip hop started to form. And then you started hearing a lot of sampling of Parliament. So this music that I heard as a kid with family parties and, you know, in the neighborhoods, you started hearing it sampled in this really new cool style of music. And so it was just kind of, and it really was so influential. Parliament was so influential. And in the hip hop scene, if you listen to anything from, you know, Dr. Dre or Snoop Dogg or Ice Cube, you know, there was such that, particularly the West Coast, was so influenced by Parliament Funkadelic, both Parliament and Funkadelic, and then the two combined, that it was just something that always stuck with me. So I, you know, as a kid, I started playing music and started playing in bands, but it was always kind of I always wanted to play funk, and I played bass. And so when you have bass players like Bootsy Collins, you know, that you strive to play like, and you know, that's your bread and butter. It's always your dream to do something like that, to put together, you know, a band that would play these songs. But it's such a big endeavor. I mean, it's 11 people, 12 people, if you want to do it right, where you have a horn section and you have, you know, multiple singers, and you have a couple guitar players and a couple people playing keys and a drummer. Ultimately, it was a goal that I had forever. And I'd kind of throw in a couple songs here and there with the bands that I was playing and try to do, like, you know, like a stripped down version of, you know, songs like The Wizard of Finance, you know, and we play parties, or we play like a friend's wedding, or, you know, do stuff for fun. And then eventually you start talking to enough people, and everybody loves it. Everybody loves that idea. And I was fortunate enough to grow up in a community, you know, where there was a lot of musicians that, you know, all appreciated different types of music, and everybody loves P-Funk. So you talk to enough people and they, you know, it's not like there's a whole lot of money in it, because there's 11 or 12 mouths to feed, but everybody really does it for fun. And so we did we started off by just doing a one-off show at a place called Burnham Brewery. They always have a big festival, you know, their Labor Day's festival. And it was just a hit. I mean, immediately after the show, they're like, okay, when are you guys coming back? When are you going to do this again? So that was kind of how it all came together.
Yeah, and the music of George Clinton and P-Funk is known for its social and political commentary. Does music have any influence on your political consciousness?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, growing up, you listen to all kinds of different music, and there's, you know, particularly George Clinton and, you know, Parliament and Funkadelic and all the offshoots and really all of that 70s sound. You had such powerful messages, you know, and it's really powerful music that got people to get up and move. A lot of people sometimes aren't paying attention to the lyrics, but there are so many powerful messages that are within that just sound like a straight up dance song or sound like a party song. But I mean, it goes across for all the different influences. I don't think that I just listen to funk music. It's a huge part of it. But, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of punk rock music, and I grew up listening to, you know, a lot of, you know, what I would consider, you know, kind of your experimental rock and stuff like that, your prog rock and things like that. But really, you know, as a bass player and as somebody who really kind of tuned in with the message that was being really spoken through with Parliament's music, it always spoke to me, you know, in a way that, you know, I always took to heart. So
during their peak years in the 1970s, P-Funk were known as one of the wildest bands in American music. What do your colleagues at the State House think about your work with America Eats Its Young?
I don't know if they know that. I mean, to tell you the truth, this might be the story that breaks that. I'm fairly new over there, and you know, I think, you know, having to explain that I'm in a band called America Eats Its Young would probably be a pretty funny conversation. But I also, you know, I'm an open book. I mean, it's, you know, out there playing shows. It's not as if this is, you know, done under the cover silence. We play in front of hundreds of people. It'll be interesting, but that conversation really hasn't come up. Some of the, you know, my colleagues in the Democratic caucus, they know that. But it would be interesting to sit down and have a conversation with some of, you know, some of my colleagues who might be a little bit more conservative or may not even know who P-Funk is. So,
and you brought a few classic P-Funk songs to share with us. The first song we're going to listen to is the title track from Parliament's 1977 album, Funkadelic versus the Placebo Syndrome. Tell us about the song.
So Funkadelic is it's an amazing song. It's like 7 minutes, but it's super upbeat. It's super funky. It's got this real danceable groove to it. When you listen, and most people hear it, and it kind of sounds funny because you hear a lot of catchphrases that were big at that time, or like, you know, at the time you had a lot of advertising that was happening. And so there's a lot of taglines from different products that were being sold at the time. And what the song is about, Funkadelic, you know, it's about, you know, trading in, you know, kind of your realness, your own, you know, personal identity or things that are, you know, that are important to you for consumerism, you know, buying, you know, buy this product, you know, have it your way. You know, the Burger King tagline, you know, how do you spell relief? And, you know, kind of the warnings of, you know, what consumerism can do to you. And I think that's a really, you know, it was kind of ahead of their time, because now we look at like how consumerism's really, you know, it's a serious issue. You know, people are obsessed with their phones, people are obsessed with brands, people are obsessed with looking a certain way or, you know, being of a certain status. And I think it was a message that he's, you know, George Clinton probably saw coming down the pipeline as, you know, these companies got better and better at advertising and making people believe that you could buy happiness if you bought their product. And so, you know, that was one of the things, you know, that that Funkadelic, I think, really spoke to.
Oh, but we'll be pecking lightly, like a woodpecker with a headache, because it's cheaper to funk than it is to pay attention. You dig? A huckabuck! A lo and behold, someone's funking with mood control.
Every kind of beer.
Deprogram.
Now, since they took ever cure your ear.
Peck me lightly, like a woodpecker with a headache.
Will you take it?
The non-profit organization.
We just heard Funkadelic by Parliament, as selected by my guest this week, Indiana State Senator Rodney Paul Jr. Let's return to our conversation. And you wanted to share two tracks from Funkadelic's 1972 album, America Eats Its Young, the album that your band is named after. First, tell us about Biological Speculation.
Biological Speculation off of America Eats Its Young is probably, you know, it's one that we all absolutely, in the band, it's just that everybody loves that song because it's such a positive, you know, like you bring, you know, you feel like you're, everybody's in it. It speaks to me being in the legislature in particular, because it talks about, you know, when the laws of man, you know, can become cruel and can create hunger and can create, you know, a sense of unfairness, you know, a sense of the haves and the have nots, you know, the laws of nature take over. You have that swing, you know, you have people that get involved, you have people that become active, and they want to make that change, and they want to work together, you know, to see that change. And so Biological Speculation is, I think, puts that right on the nose. You know, when things are unfair, you will see people get involved and get engaged. And so, yeah, it's funny, because even within our own band, there's differences in political affiliation, there's differences in political upbringing, but it's a song that we all love and we all can relate to in some way.
And you already talked a little bit about this, but the second song that you chose from the America Eats Its Young album is Everybody's Going to Make It This Time. Why did you choose this song?
That's a song that we typically will, if we play it, we'll end the night with it. And it is such an uplifting song. You know, it talks about, you know, we really have to watch what we're doing, you know, in, you know, because we, you know, if we're not paying attention to what we're doing, and, you know, if we're not paying attention to the mistakes that have been made in the past, we're bound to continuously make those mistakes and make this world worse than it needs to be. So the idea that we all have to work together to get ourselves on the right track, to get ourselves in the right mindset, and to make this world a better place than the world we were born into. I mean, who can't get behind that? You know, I think that that's, you know, the whole reason that I think people get active, you know, the whole reason that people take elected office, the whole reason that people start, you know, to join organizations is because they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And I think that song speaks beautifully to that. I mean, it's right on the nose. So
Our mothers and our fathers, they had lives to live. Oh, and today is proof that mistakes were made. There's not a doubt in my heart, they done the best that they knew how. And there's still time for us to make the grade.
We just heard Everybody's Going to Make It This Time from Funkadelic's 1972 album, America Eats Its Young. As selected by my guest this week, Indiana State Senator Rodney Pohl Jr. Let's return to our conversation. The final song that you chose to share is Good Thoughts, Bad Thoughts from Funkadelic's 1974 album, Standing on the Verge of Getting It On. Tell us about this track.
That one is, it's a very heavy song. It's a solo, it's an Eddie Hazel solo. Eddie Hazel was one of the most emotive guitar players that I think came out of that era, and influenced so many guitar players after him. And Good Thoughts, Bad Thoughts, it reminds me of a friend that I lost, a friend that I used to play music with, who was a guitar player and was somebody who loved Eddie Hazel. Good Thoughts, Bad Thoughts, though, there's a spoken word section on that where, you know, I believe it's George, is speaking about, you know, how you are really as high as your highest aspiration. You know, the idea that good thoughts bring good fruit and bad thoughts will rot your flesh. I believe that's the quote that he actually says in the song. You know, it's about, you know, I think people that battle with depression, that it's about, you know, the idea that, you know, you have to have a positive mindset about certain things. Because, you know, ultimately I did lose my friend to both, you know, drug addiction and suicide. And you know, every time I hear that song, it always hits home. But I think it's a song that when you hear it and you can understand the message that's being put out there, you can kind of see it's a cautionary tale, you know, making sure that, you know, you're surrounding yourself with positivity. And so, you know, I think it's a really great message that, you know, anybody that's out there struggling, you know, you hear that song, or you listen to that song, I think it kind of puts things into perspective.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share that I didn't ask you today?
No. I think, kind of unloaded a lot there. You know, as you can tell, I'm, you know, very big fan of the music and you know, the message behind it. You know, a lot of people, I think, you know, they kind of write off Parliament as a fun band, as this wild band. But there was definitely a lot that I think, you know, when you talk to people that really kind of get into the music and, you know, hear George explain some of the lyrics himself and some of the folks that were in the band, you know, a lot of it gets put on George, but he had some amazing musicians that he surrounded himself with. So, you know, when you really hear the backstories behind some of that stuff, you kind of realize, wow, it was a really special time and a really special band that influenced so many others after them.
Senator Rodney Pohl, thank you so much for being here with us today and for sharing some classic P-Funk music. If our listeners wanted to learn more about your band, you have a Facebook page. They can just search for America Eats Its Young.
Yep.
You're a great inspiration to me and many other progressive Latinos in Indiana. Thank you for your work, and thank you again for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for what you're doing. What an amazing program. I was so excited when you told me about it.
My guest this week has been the Indiana State Senator and musician, Rodney Pohl Jr. To learn more about his work with the Indiana Senate Democrats, go to indianasenatedemocrats.org. Stay tuned for future editions of Rebel Music on Cultural Manifesto.
Oh.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks to our guests, Shayna Cleveland and Rodney Pohl Jr. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Kyle Long, and you've been listening to Cultural Manifesto.